This show is brought to you by Safety FM.
Welcome to Unapologetically Bold, I'm Not Sorry For. If you are a person that is tired of apologizing for being you, you know, the human part of you that sometimes feels like it has to be different at home versus work versus play, the human side that just wants to be hot, humble, open, and transparent about your wants, desires, and uniqueness. If you answered yes, this is for you. Join me, Emily Elrod, as I dive into conversations with amazing guests about what they are not sorry for in creative and loving ways. Let's get started. Welcome, everybody. Welcome to Unapologetically Bold, I'm Not Sorry For. And I am blessed today to have Mary Ann with me. Thank you so much for joining me today.
Oh, it is a pleasure. Do you know, just the opening of your show made me feel kind of tearful. This idea you have of people being able to be authentically themselves and truly human, it's fantastic.
Well, thank you. And I'm blessed to have the space to be able to do this, but also to meet amazing people like you. We have been connected through a few different people. I think Kevin Monroe is one of them that has really connected us. And it is just that heart-centered people that care for humanity. And it's not just in this fluffy thing like, oh, let's have world peace, which, you know, we're not going to argue for. We would kind of like that. But it's designing environments and creating environments where people can thrive and be their best self at home, work, and play. And that's what I love about what you do and what this topic is about today. So before we go into it, I do want you just to quickly introduce yourself. Just tell people about who you are and a little bit about your background.
Sure. Well, my name is Mary Ann Kerr. I currently have a small boutique consulting firm that looks at the workplace and does organizational health and culture work. But I came to it after 34 years working in what I call the social profit sector. So that's charitable organization, nonprofit organizations, doing primarily organizational leadership and fundraising. So I had amazing teams. I helped to raise over $110 million for mostly small and mid-sized organizations in all kinds of different areas. And after all of those years of doing that, when I looked back over my career, I thought about the places where I had the most success were places where people were really engaged in the work, loved their teams, were like happy, you know. And at the beginning of my career, I can remember bosses saying to me, well, it's not your job to make people happy. And I thought, well, okay, but why not?
Yes. And that's what I love is why not? You have options. You can go either way.
Yeah.
Why not? It's not the easiest road. It's not. And it's not being a people pleaser, because whenever you're kind and loving and honest with people, there's some difficult conversations. And I think that beautifully flows into what this you're going to be talking about today and what you're unapologetically bold about. And so I just love to transition into that. Mary Ann, what are you no longer apologizing for?
Well, I am no longer apologizing for providing criticism, really, to the sector that I love. You know, the charitable sector, the not-for-profit sector. I'm tired of people getting upset when I have something to say that is not all rainbow and sunshine and, you know, bluebirds about the sector, because there is a lot of work that needs to be done. So I am really, really tired of taking criticism for trying to shine a light on the things that need to be improved. So that's what I'm unapologetic for. And I'm thrilled to be able to say it out loud.
Yay. And that's what I love. I love that you are calling out people that you like, that you said that is love. And my listeners know this, my definition of love is to be patient, kind, honest, understanding, and not boasting of ill will. And that's one that I find a lot of the times is that honesty is missing, because it's like, oh, I can't love them if I actually tell them what they're doing wrong. Let's reverse that. No, it is being caring and kind, and you've worked your tail off for a sector that kind of has been getting a bad name by a few, and it's not a bunch, but it's just some of them just have been not doing some great things. And you're from Canada too. Right. So this year has really been a tricky one.
This year has been really tough. Yeah. We had the big, I don't know how much folks in the U.S. know about the We Charity scandal, but I mean, it's an international organization. It operates in the U.S. and Canada and other parts of the world. And, you know, I think what we learned from that is, you know, if you are giving to organizations, you really need to do a lot of due diligence. You need to, you need to ask really good questions. Mm-hmm. And that was a concern for some organizations because they felt like, oh, you know, talking negatively about this one organization will negatively impact the entire sector. And I think the problem with that is that it undervalues the brilliance of the human mind to be at heart, to be able to make really good decisions. I mean, people are not painting us all with the same brush. They just are not. I think, oh, there's my dogs. I think, to say those kinds of things is really almost demeaning to donors and to prospective donors. That's what I think. We have a lot of work to do, and it's okay that we have work to do, but we can't pretend that we don't.
I agree. And even the dog's giving an amen to this one because it's so true. I see this in all sectors that I go into, is that a lot of people have the theory, if we paint one with this brush, it will be all. And right. I love what you said about how it cuts out on the human ability to make decisions.
Right.
90% of people are amazing. There is a 10% headache population. I've always said that. I've never not had. And in the work that I do, I typically can name them. And we work with thousands and thousands of people. So there's not that many.
Yeah.
But it still does not mean that you don't call things out whenever they're there. Or on the other aspect, you don't go from the lens of let's cover it up, because that's something I've also seen. So tell me more on whenever you're like, okay, I'm going to step out and I'm going to boldly criticize on the people that grew me, the people that love me. You know, this is my sector, you know, but I got to be honest with them.
Yeah. Well, you know, I have a very recent example. There is an organization here in Canada called Kids Help Phone. It's an amazing organization, is really well loved. But there was our public broadcaster, the Canadian Broadcasting Corporation, did a story where they focused. It's a phone line, right? And they do in tremendous work. But they had some counselors who came to the media and said, you know, there's some stuff happening and we're finding this work environment toxic. And it was a very detailed article. It provided a lot of kind of very credible data and information on why they were feeling this way. And so I shared that story and I invited people from Kids Help Phone. I shared it on LinkedIn. I invited them in and I said, you know, what's happening? Talk to us. Tell us what's going on. Because what I love about social media is that it democratizes conversation, right? It does not allow, it calls for radical transparency, and it's an opportunity. Now, to me, I am always, and I have said this before, I am always going to err on the side of supporting those with less power, those who have less of a voice. So I always start by believing, because I think if somebody has gone to the media, they have very likely, tried other things first, right? Mm-hmm. This going to the media always feels like a last ditch effort. And I took a ton of abuse over that, because it's such a well-loved organization here, right? People didn't want to hear about it. And in fact, I had people that I was connected with from Kids Help Phone Line who disconnected with me. I had one person from the organization reach out and say, let's chat. But at the same time, I had so much negativity from others in the sector. I actually said to that person, listen, it's not about you and me talking, right? This isn't about you telling me what's going on. This is about telling everybody. It's about giving voice and giving credibility, really, to the fact that people have spoken up, whether you think it's true or not. That's a totally different story. It's about being democratic and open and transparent.
And that's beautiful. And it's different too, because some listeners may be hearing earlier, like you said, it's not boasting of ill will, but there's a difference. No. It's not. there is love with this. It's that honesty aspect. It's not that we're gossiping and saying, hey, these people are doing it behind da-da-da. We don't want you to give any money. It's like,
right.
It's the transparent. It's the hotness. It's humble, open, and transparent that we need now more than ever. And I love how you're in Canada. I'm in America. But even around this world, I know people from Australia. Well, almost every continent except Antarctica. Don't know anybody from there yet. But all that to say is people want to be hot. They want to be humble, open, and transparent. And we're not taking any more crap.
Right.
So, and I think it's interesting, too, talking about the social profit sector, and that I've done some work with charities. And at first, I'm like, well, we're a nonprofit. We can't make any money. And it's like, oh, dang, you're making a lot of money. You're making a lot of money and not distributing it the way that you tell people that you are.
You know, anytime you're thinking about making a gift to charity or not for profit, it starts with you and asking yourself and your family, what's important to us? What matters to us? What are the causes that we want to ensure continue? And there's lots of organizations out there, honestly, who, for me, I go, this organization, I cannot afford to fail. We have to make sure that they are successful. And then I really recommend, you know, you do the basic things like look at the website and look at their financials, right? Because I don't know the laws in the US the same way, but here we have lots of mechanisms for you to look at the kind of, Revenue Canada reports that you can look at to see where money is being spent and how it's being spent. And the vast majority of organizations really are doing what they say they're going to do, right? The vast majority. Pick up the phone. Call them, ask them, speak to a human being, and just do your homework. That's really what I would say. But beyond all else, give, even if it's, even if it's $10, whatever you can afford to do. I think that obviously this is a tough year for the sector, tough year for everybody, and it's got a ripple effect. So the demand on organizations is higher and the revenue is lower. So that's a big problem. So that's what I would say. For organizations that, there is no perfect organization. So when I think about that example I was just speaking to, I mean, everybody makes mistakes. Everybody, that's how we learn. That's how we innovate. That's how we get better. So let's not see those criticisms as being, that's not a good organization to give to, because I don't feel that way. No part of me would say don't give to Kids Help Phone. I think they do tremendous work, but that doesn't mean they don't have work to do. Mm-hmm. It just doesn't.
And that's the thing, is if you think anybody or anything is perfect, you have a false mindset, because if humans are doing it, we will fail you. Like I even tell my people, I tell my people this all the time. Like I'm technically your boss or leader by title, but they teach me more. So I don't know. I tell some of them that they're my bosses in some areas, but I'm going to fail them. Like that's set out. I'm a human. I'm imperfect. I am going to screw up. I am probably going to piss you off. I am going to do things.
Right.
But we're going to come together with love and we're going to come with understanding. And when I do it, call me out. Yeah. Offer that criticism because it's needed. The thing is, when you're securing yourself and whenever you're working on it, instead of perfection, you go to progression, you don't mind those criticisms.
I love that. And feedback, right? It is that people say it's a gift, but it really is a gift. And I think the more senior you become in the workplace, the less often you receive it and the more you need it, right? Because the mistakes you make have a much bigger impact and ripple effect. Someone asked me today, what was the best advice I ever got? And for me, it was to be really conscious of what I say as a leader, because people are looking to you, right? And everything you say really matters. And so that's, again, what brings me back to this whole concept of transparency in the sector. When somebody stands up and says, yes, there was a story in the paper. Yes, we're working on it. Yes, thank you for caring about us and caring about our work so much. Mm-hmm. That's it, right?
And that makes me think of too, even the work that I do is we do something, my favorite thing to do is frustration eliminations. And so that's basically where you come in and you tell about a frustration, because we're about stress to strategic stuff. But you have a frustration, you come in and we do some things where we create an environment where people can talk and have conversations, but we do something about it. And it's just like this. When you do something about it, you actually get greater loyalty in return, because you saw it, you commended it, you called it out, and you changed it. You didn't sweep it under the rug. You didn't let it fester and brew and turn into its own little beast that's an elephant in the room that nobody addresses, but we all know it's there.
Exactly. Yeah, it's so true. I mean, you have to shine a light on things. And, you know, I think the workplace, especially, you know, as I say younger people, but I guess it's not necessarily younger, but as newer generations are coming into the workforce, their expectations are so different. I think that my generation put up with stuff that today, like my own kids and some of the people that I have worked with wouldn't. They just would not put up with that kind of I would say mistreatment. I would say lack of respect, right? That's what matters to folks, is feeling valued and respected and heard, and that they're not a resource or they're not capital. They're just people, right? They're just human beings who want to be seen that way. And I think we have a long way to go in every sector. But I want our sector, I really want the charitable, nonprofit, social profit sector, I want it to lead, because we are about philanthropy, right? We're about caring about the world, mending the world. You know, I feel as though we could play a leadership role here that we're currently not.
And it makes me think, I did for a board retreat for a healthcare nonprofit. And we did the multi-generational aspects of giving.
Great.
And it was one of my favorite classes and I guess courses or whatever teachings to give, because it was so interesting about my generation.
Yeah.
Since we do have a lot of debt due to a lot of schooling that a lot of us have, our time and our talents, we are more readily to give than our capital that we have. And so it's a very interesting concept too, as you talk about the newer generations. We don't put up with things, but we'll give. Mm-hmm. And how we give is a little bit different than the traditional model.
Right.
So if an adaptation is not being well received, and if you're not going to call out things, and if you're not going to be transparent, you might have a problem.
Yeah.
So I think it's so important, like you said, to boldly offer this criticism. And it's constructive. I do want to put that. I believe that it's a constructive criticism.
Yeah. I call myself lovingly critical.
Yes. Right?
And that is how I feel. I mean, I would not have spent 34 years in the sector if I didn't love the work that we do. Right. And every day I hear stories, right, about the impact of the work of the sector. But I also hear stories about the expense at which that impact has come to the people who are dedicating their work lives to it. So the two things, it doesn't have to be that way. It just does not. And I think ultimately, you know, 80% of the Canadian workforce is disengaged. 70% of them blame their manager. And 14% of them are out there wreaking havoc, you know, like quite actively sabotaging your organization. So with that kind of knowledge, with the knowledge of, you know, high use here in Canada, we're like, I think it's the third or fourth highest use of antidepressants of the OECD countries. We have high rate of alcoholism. I mean, those things are all linked, right? If it sucks to be at work, what do you do when you go home?
And that's so true. And that's what I love about what you do. And it's a lot of what we do too. It's just that passion for people and creating environments where they're supposed to thrive.
Yeah.
And I know we're right at our time, we're getting close, but I'm going to take it a little off topic.
Okay.
But I think a lot of things on this too is, I call it the Linus effect. Like, you know, Charlie Brown and everybody has their blanket and like their safety net and their blanket, and they got to hold it. That's what's coming to my mind as I'm hearing you talk about that, and how our ability to adapt and to overcome when we're told that something it, that when we're criticized or something, or we just want our blanket and we want to hold it. Or there's a great, he's a preacher, but I love some of his talks that he speaks on. His name's Mike Todd. And he talks about sitting in the chair of unfair and how many times that we sit in there and we stay in there and we don't do things that just because it's easy. And then we surround ourselves with people just like that. So that may like, oh, it's unfair because I got all these expectations as a leader, or it's unfair because they bypassed me for the 50th time, you know, and you can't be doing your great work if you're sitting in the chair, you know, because you're not. And so that's what comes to my mind on that. What do you think when I say that, or what do you hear?
I'm going to tell you the first thing. Here's feedback. Don't apologize that Mike Todd's a preacher.
Yep.
Right. I mean, one of the things I love about Kevin Monroe is that he's a really faith-based person, and we talk a lot about faith, and I don't come from that same background, but he's taught me a lot about it. And I have grown as a human being because of that. Right. And I think the truth is, if you are wearing armor, right, which is what happens when you're in that chair, right, you put on armor in order to protect yourself about against the next disappointment that's going to happen at work. And if you're wearing armor, the more armor you put on, the less authentic you're able to be, the more you have to let it go as you walk out that door, although these days it's out of this door and into my hallway, right? But you're having to let off layers of armor that you've put on in order to survive the workday. And, that is such a heavy weight to bear, right? Such a heavy weight to bear.
And that's the reason why I think there's a lot of times there's a crux between people can't be humans at home, work, and play.
Right.
Like, you're human everywhere, but it's like we walk into our office, we have to be put on this one suit. Then we walk out. And it's like, that's so stressful. Yeah. Why can't we just be humans? Like, why can't we receive feedback and not get offended for it? Because we think that it's taking our identity and it's eating in, like, today, example, my kids. Yeah. I love, 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 love my children. And they teach me so many life lessons that. But today, my son, I said something to him about he's dealing with ego issues, and I can see it. He's 9. Yeah. We have CEO meetings, and that is something that we had talked about. We do 3 glows, which is 3 improvements or 3 things that you've been doing good, and 1 grow.
Okay.
So his grow for this week is don't defend yourself. Even if they're right or even if they're wrong, don't defend yourself. It's okay. Not every time do you have to have a comment. And I think that's something, too. It's just these ego things that we self-identify, and that's what I call it, the Linus blanket. Like, we got to cover it up, cover ourselves. Not only are we basking in that chair of unfair, we're also covering ourselves to get comfortable by things that's our pacifiers or the ways that we can't receive information.
Yeah.
So we are depressed because we don't know what to do. We feel stuck.
Yeah.
So for people that, it's a 2-part question. So for people that are staying in the chair, what would you tell them? And then what would you tell the leaders that are dealing with the people that are sitting in the chair and you don't know what to do?
Yeah. Well, for the person sitting in the chair first, I'd say, try to remember, try to think back to a time when you actually were able to get out of the chair. Because, we all have moments in our lives when we've successfully overcome, right? It might not be a work situation, and think about what you did in order to pull yourself up and out of that. And so much depends on your power relationship with those that are perhaps causing you to feel as though, right, poor me, this is all wrong. Nobody recognizes me. Nobody respects me. No one values me. If that's actually true, and it might be, then maybe you're not in the right place. Right. And if you're the leader, I think the biggest thing, and it's really become apparent with COVID-19, because we're seeing into people's homes, we're seeing our kids, we're hearing our dogs, we're getting little glimpses of people's lives. And we've mistaken that with getting to know people, because It's not really what's happening. I think the demands on people have been so high, and we're getting to know you on a very surface level now. I know that, you know, right now you think my office is tidy. If I turned my camera to the right or the left, you would see that it is not, right? I'm letting you see, and people are letting you see some of who they are, but not who they are deep down inside, right? And I think that superficial issue is part of the issue, because everything comes down to relationships. So what I would say to that leader or those leaders is you really need to know your people. You really need to know them. You need to listen, right? You need to understand, you know, why does Marianne feel undervalued, disrespected, inauthentic, right? Why is she having this experience? And if I do actually value her work, what can I do to change that? So it really all comes down to being human and humane with each other. Mm-hmm. It's all about relationships, right?
It's so true. And I think that actually what I talked about earlier, the three gloves and one grow, that has been so impactful, not just with my kids, because I test everything out on them. And then I take it to because if they're receptive, I just say that sometimes I work with grown children. And if it's easy to understand and it fosters a sense of security, especially when kids are going through these awkward phases in life, and COVID's one of them on top of already things that are happening. But that's one that I found that allows that sense of getting to know each other. If and it goes back to this, boldly offering criticism, giving a grow. How can you improve? My kids last week, they've told me this maybe more than once, is I'm hard on myself. Mm-hmm. I know I'm hard on myself. And so finding ways that I can see it, I can come aware of it. And it's like, okay, they have my best interest. Because they want me to succeed. They want Workspeed to succeed. They want the podcast. They want all these things. They want my best. And I love that they tell me that. They don't just tell me they're an amazing mother, which I love to hear. But I love that they tell me, hey, mom, you went a little bit off your rocker whenever your computer died. Can we examine this? Can we see a little bit more? Like, why did you yell? And then it's funny, like last week, one of their glows was, hey, mama, you haven't been getting so mad at your computer now because it's died for the fourth time. I'm like, ah. I was like,
yay.
But it's how that criticism is sometimes seen as an attack. But if you put it in the correct environment, it actually helps foster a sense of what I call serotonin, the safety cop of the body, that you can come up, you can come together. And it also fosters oxytocin, which is love, the loving, bonding, connecting side, because you're being truthful. So
I love that. Sorry, but you know they love you, right? You know they love you. And I think that's the thing at work. And again, you know, I've talked about this with other people, but the idea that there can be love at work. Right. Mm-hmm. There can be, and there should be, and we should bring that in. And it's not some airy fairy kind of, it's not, it's really about, and as you talk about the chemical reaction, when I have a friend at work, someone who really cares about who I am and how I am, right. Mm-hmm. That makes such a difference. And when we talked a little bit before and you told me about these chemical things, I'd never thought about it before, but it really spoke to some of my past poor experiences in the workplace. I thought, that's bang on. That's exactly how I was feeling. So I love the work that you're doing. I think it's really important.
Well, thank you. And it's a reciprocate. Like, I am so blessed that you're doing the work that you're doing in the social profit area. And so I guess I got a two-part final question. First part, somebody's apologizing for boldly offering criticism. It could be the social profit. It could be to wherever it may be. What would you say to them?
I would say, you know, thank you. And don't feel sorry. I'm grateful to you for caring so much that you're taking the time to provide that feedback, because feedback is a gift and it makes us better. So thank you.
So good. And then the second part, people want to reach out and find you. How can they get a hold of you?
Best way to find me is on LinkedIn, and I'm currently writing a book about these kinds of issues in the workplace in the social private sector. So I'm a little slower to respond than I used to be, but I love to hear from folks. So Marianne Kerr on LinkedIn.
I'm so excited for that. And we'll put a link whenever it's ready to drop out. So thank you so much.
And my pleasure.
All that have listened in and will listen later. Y'all have an amazing and blessed day.
Thank you so much for tuning in to this episode of Unapologetically Bold, I'm Not Sorry For. If this touched you in any way, please like and subscribe and share with your friends as we continue the message of being unapologetically bold by being hot humans who are humble, open, and transparent. See you next time.